Well, it's a complicated and cascading series of events that the virus has triggered in terms of the food supply. I think the first impact was the fact that schools were closed throughout the United States. And when schools close, it means that youngsters who would receive a breakfast or lunch at school are no longer obviously receiving that breakfast and lunch. That led ultimately to decisions in across the country to close restaurants, bars, fast food facilities. So our entire food service aspect of the food supply chain was essentially shut down. And between school lunch and school breakfast and the food service, you're talking about potentially a market for 40 to 50% of the food that's actually produced and processed in the United States. So that the question is, what happens in that circumstance? Well, people began to go to the grocery store to stock up since they weren't going to eat out, since their children were going to be spending time at home. There was a bit of a panic at the outset, and so people began to stock up to the point where there were shortages at grocery stores, and people assumed from that that there would be shortages of food generally. That is obviously not the case. In fact, we have a significant supply of food. The challenge is getting it to where it's needed now as we sort of realign the sale of food products. At the same time this was going on, efforts to export food, which we often do in the United States, roughly 30% of everything that's grown in the United States is exported. The same challenges, we were confronting the same challenges in the export market. The reality was that in Asian countries, food service operations were shutting down, schools were shutting down. So there's been a major disruption in the supply. As we began to make the adjustment, people began to lose their jobs as a result of the virus. And they began to think that they might need the help of food banks and pantries. Well, the demand for food bank contributions to families increased by roughly 30 to 40% overnight. Food banks were not necessarily equipped to handle that influx. At the same time that was happening, food banks have normally relied on donations from retail outlets where maybe the lettuce is a day or two older than some customers would like, and so they would give that excess leftover product to food banks. Well, there were no leftover products at retail stores because people were stocking up. And so food banks began to have a stress on their operation. And the consequence of that was that food banks began to put pressure on the United States Department of Agriculture to purchase commodities so that food banks could be replenished. Well, mm-hmm. The problem was that the Department of Agriculture has to have the money to do that. They didn't have the money to do it because they had given all the money that would normally be available for that kind of emergency out to farmers because of the trade and tariff situation. Okay. So it was a cascading set of events that has just basically created a mismatch, if you will, of where the supply is and where the demand is.
Okay, so in other words, there is no food shortage as many people believe there is. There's a disruption. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct. To the point where dairy farmers, for example, can't sell their milk. There's no place for them to sell their milk because kids aren't consuming it at school. And grocery stores, because of the panic, began to limit the amount of milk that was being sold. And as a result, farmers have been dumping millions and millions of pounds of milk because they have no market for it. And that's the sad reality. Now, the other cascading event that's taking place now because of the virus is that it has now crept into the processing facilities. And so a number of processing facilities are beginning to shut down. Now, that could potentially create a food shortage if we had a number of processing facilities across the country shut down simultaneously. Then there would be obviously an issue of where we would be able to get food processed and get it into the grocery stores for folks. But at this point in time, there's not a shortage. There's just a mismatch, a disruption of the supply chain.
So how should this be addressed to avoid this happening in the future?
The first thing in the process, I mean, I think you have to get yourself through this crisis first and foremost, right? So that you're in a position to begin to think about lessons learned. So first and foremost, you've got to protect the frontline workers. You've got to protect the people who are processing food. You've got to protect the people that are retailing the food. You've got to protect the people who are producing the food so that the supply of food continues to get grown, processed, and sold. And so if we have this situation again, then we need to think about those people in the same way we think about the nurses and the doctors and the lab technicians that are helping people who are sick from this virus in hospitals across the country. We see them as first responders. We see them on the front lines. We need to see the same, we have the same attitude about the folks who handle our food so that we have a continuation. Secondly, we have to have a Department of Agriculture adequately funded and staffed to be able to marshal the resources at a moment's notice so that we know which regulations under normal circumstances make sense, but under this kind of circumstance do not. So, for example, we have regulations that basically say that certain food banks may not qualify for assistance from the government because they're located in an affluent neighborhood. Well, you know what? There is no affluent neighborhoods now. Everyone's affected by this. People are losing their jobs across the board. This is not a situation where just a small segment of our country is losing employment. It's widespread across the board. So we need to make sure that the regulations that would normally make sense can be bypassed quickly. And we need to make sure that there's constantly the capacity, the resources to be able to get food products to food banks so that they are poor and the needy. And that means being creative about this and also investing in the infrastructure in those food banks so that they're capable of refrigeration and storage. Part of the problem with dairy products is that they're perishable. Well, we'd love to be able to give those millions of pounds of milk that are being dumped and not used to food banks, but they don't have the capacity today to store that milk for 3 or 4 or 5 days before they can distribute it. So how do we create a system and a process by which we're investing in the infrastructure in those food banks and pantries so they're able to respond to a crisis of this magnitude? So there are a multitude of steps that have to be taken, but first and foremost, we got to get through this particular crisis with the least amount of disruption. That means protecting the workers. It means making sure that we get resources to people, these unemployment checks, these stimulus checks. They need to get out the door so that people have some resource so that they can continue to take care of their families.
One other question, forward-looking, forward-thinking, futurist type of view.